Hello and welcome to the Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we're looking to Japan and considering the impact of last week's decision by the Bank of Japan to continue with its quantitative easing program. We start in Hong Kong with Mark Anderson, co-head of asset allocation at UBS Wealth Management's Chief Investment Office. Mark explains exactly what the Bank of Japan did last week.
So what the Bank of Japan essentially did was to show that global central bankers around the world are still in a mode where they're fighting inflation in Japan a bit more forcefully than elsewhere these days by again expanding the balance sheet of the BOJ rather dramatically in the extent of wanting to fight deflation. That obviously leaves investors around the globe relatively happy as it continues to push equity prices and bond prices higher. I think they're trying to achieve the stated goals, obviously being that they want inflation to go higher in Japan. But if you look at it from a Japanese population point of view, we have an aging society that actually would not be too bad off in a deflationary environment where the money actually buys them more. So I think ultimately what they're trying to achieve is a situation where growth and inflation in conjunction can bring down debt levels in Japan that are at this point in time still the highest in the world in terms of debt to GDP ratios.
Mark Anderson in Hong Kong. What's the view in Tokyo? Can these moves actually deliver the desired outcomes? Fumio Nakakubo is Chief Investment Officer for Japan at UBS Wealth Management.
We believe the recent BOJ move could help the economy and lift inflation, but only to a small extent. Nevertheless, Governor Haruhiko Kuroda stated he did what he could to help lift inflation to 2% in 2015. At the same time, the governor has relaxed the language for the time frame of achieving the 2% inflation target. In addition, the BOJ had to lower its growth rate and inflation forecasts for this year and next at the same time, both of which show the BOJ's lack of confidence, which keeps our expectations muted.
Time for this week's essay. Paul Donovan, UBS Deputy Head of Global Economics, considers the background to and likely implications of the recent Bank of Japan decision.
Stirring events in Japan, where it would appear that the illusion that is Abenomics requires a further sprinkling of magic fairy dust to convince a skeptical public that the illusion is in fact real. In other words, just hours after the symbolic end of US quantitative policy, the Bank of Japan has decided to print yet more money because that policy has been working so well on its own to date. We had expected an increase in quantitative policy probably before the end of this year, although in line with almost everyone in the markets, we had not expected the increase to come quite yet. What will printing money accomplish? The theory is it will increase inflation expectations. The problem is that inflation expectations in the sense of consumer CPI inflation expectations are not the issue. The Japanese consumer always believes that CPI is rising. The Japanese consumer is not, frankly, terribly good at predicting inflation. The difficulty with this is that the Japanese consumer also believes that their wages will not rise. And so they believe that their standard of living has been eroded. This then curtails their willingness to consume. Japanese quantitative policy has, to date, very unusually for quantitative policies, tended to leak outside of Japan, with bank lending overseas increasing and foreign direct investment rising as a share of total investment. This means that the main consequence of Japanese quantitative policy has been a weaker yen and boosted profit margins for exporters. To make this policy more effective in the domestic economy, the government will now need to persuade Japanese exporters to pay those higher profits away in the form of higher domestic Japanese wages, which would be the best option, or domestic investment, or dividends.
That was Paul Donovan, UBS Deputy Head of Global Economics, with this week's essay. What about the potential impact for the rest of Asia? Fumio Nakakubo again.
Among Asian stock markets, we expect Korean equities to be most negatively impacted by a weaker Japanese yen. As Japanese and Korean exporters compete head-to-head in almost all sectors, based on our analysis, a 1% depreciation of the Japanese yen should increase Japanese corporate earnings by about 0.56%, and most of that gain is likely to come at the expense of Korean exporters. In that sense, we believe some institutional funds are likely to rotate from Korean to Japanese exporters.
Bad news for Korea, then. The global view is still a relatively positive one for investors, though. Mark Anderson paints a picture of opportunity looking into the longer term.
So when we look at things here in UBS, it points into this picture where we actually have, if we look across the globe, and this is not just in Japan, we actually have what are characterized as reasonable levels of growth that are humming along what we'd say is longer-term potential at the moment. Now, because we have commodity prices coming down, that is essentially bringing lower inflation about, and central banks now purchasing assets still on a relatively large scale, if we look away from the U.S. central bank, then as with the Bank of Japan's large move, it brings a situation where U.S. investor can be pleased to have central bank supporting you and ultimately support equity prices in particular, which is one of our favorite investments at the moment. So it puts investors in a good position, and we think it means that you should not hold a lot of cash where you essentially get no return on your investment, potentially a negative real return, but rather look to invest in areas that yields you something like corporate bonds or equities.
Some of the longer term trends there. But what's been the immediate impact, for example, on the value of the yen? Jason Karayan, senior European correspondent for Quartz, gives his verdict.
They are being very aggressive, and they just stepped up their quantitative easing program. So inflation is inching up in Japan a little bit, but the most obvious result of the quantitative easing so far is that the yen has plummeted in value against the dollar and the euro and other major trading partners. So in a sense, what is essentially happening is that Japan has relaunched the currency wars, which was a term that was sort of coined by the Brazilian finance minister back in 2010, when quantitative easing was launched by the Fed in the US and the Bank of England in the UK and other central banks.
This aggression may well have far-reaching implications for the European Central Bank and for monetary policy in the Eurozone. Jason Karayan continues.
Japan's more aggressive stance on quantitative easing, it throws the gauntlet down for the European Central Bank. And what I think it does is it really puts in sharp relief how perhaps timid, you could say, the ECB has been so far. One of the criticisms launched at Mario Draghi at the European Central Bank is that they are allowing the Eurozone to be Japanified, to the Japanification of the Eurozone, meaning that it is flirting a bit with deflation and it's sort of a stagnant economy at the moment. So it's looking a bit like Japan did back in the 1990s. And unless the ECB takes much more aggressive action like the Bank of Japan is doing now, it could suffer a lost decade or more, like people say.
The global picture is clearly complex, particularly when it comes to how central banks around the world will react. Mark Anderson again.
Central banks, we think that they will stay rather on the easy side for the next couple of years, so we could see 1 or 2 years before we get into a tighter global monetary policy situation. So I think we're in for a couple of good years of potential investment returns, even if we look over the last couple of years, they have been very good. So some moderation in expectation is probably still reasonable to assume.
Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll get the views from our top analysts in New York. Time to take the temperature in New York with our analysts there. First up is Pim Fox, host of Bloomberg TV's Taking Stock. What did Manhattan make of the Bank of Japan announcement?
Well, it's certainly good for the stock market because this means that a lot more money is going to be flowing into the world's financial and capital markets. I mean, this $700 billion of spending on the part of the Bank of Japan and Mr. Haruhiko Kuroda, this is attempting to, reboot, reinflate, reinvigorate the Japanese economy. They're going to be buying government bonds, and in a sense that they're going to be doing is giving the patient an even bigger morphine drip, to the extent that, you know, the Japanese debt now looks as though it could go even higher. I mean, imagine having debt that is so huge that it takes, I believe, 16 digits in yen terms in order to express it.
Interestingly, the sickly patient and narcotic metaphor was also deployed by Alicia Ogawa, senior advisor with the Center on Japanese Economy and Business at Columbia Business School.
I think that there is starting to be, now that the dust is somewhat settled, some concerns being raised about, is this just another shot of some narcotic which is doomed to wear off? And it all hangs on the Prime Minister's ability to execute his so-called third arrow, the program of structural reforms, which hopefully will, in a sense, force the private sector into taking the bait that is being held forth by the central bank and start to become more risk-taking and innovative and engaged with the rest of the world in terms of turning the economy around. I think it all hangs on that, and I think that's the focus had been on that. Kuroda dropped his bombshell and everyone, hooray, oh my God, this, something is happening, and now the focus is beginning to shift once again to, we can't rely on this. The central bank is not a magician. Something else has to happen, and I think the focus has returned on that space.
Alicia had the fortune of travelling from Japan to the States almost along with the news of the Bank of Japan announcement, as she explains.
It was quite a surprise. As I mentioned, I'd been spending 2 weeks prior to the announcement in Tokyo, and I don't think that anyone had a clue that either of these two bombshells were being prepared. And, you know, in New York, it was even that much more of a surprise. We had that much more distance between us. The immediate reaction, my constituency is the investor base. The immediate reaction was of real shock and awe, and I think in the first reaction was sort of approval that indeed Kuroda meant what he said when he said he would do whatever it takes to get to 2%. I think in the last couple of days there's been a little bit more considered reaction about what does it all mean really, and what does the dual announcement with the pension fund mean, and so on. I think there's now a little bit more thoughtfulness about, yes, the guy's got guts.
So where does this leave us? Pim Fox has his concerns.
I mean, you dig this number, right? $1.2 trillion in the Japanese government pension investment fund. So they're going to move away now from bonds, and they're going to maybe put all that into stocks. Well, all that's going to do is lift the asset prices of stocks. Well, what happens? That money just sits in someone's account. Unless someone spends it and does something with it, it's just a number on a ledger sheet. And this has been, you know, an ongoing problem in, you know, what is the world's third largest economy. It's kind of a mess.
That was Bloomberg's Pim Fox, and before that, Alicia Ogawa at Columbia Business School, with the view from New York. Each week on The Bulletin with UBS, we end the show with a consideration of the client position. Here with a closing thought from Zurich is Simon Smiles, who has this program's regular client view. First up, what's the interest in Japanese equities?
Japanese equities has long been disregarded by foreign investors. And so since the start of the QE and Abenomics policies in December 2012, you've seen varying degrees of hedge fund interest playing this theme. Even long-only institutional investors en masse haven't embraced it, let alone the private clients we typically talk to. Japan remains a step too far, you know, even in APAC for most of our clients. And this probably stems from a mix of both knowledge, but also scepticism that Abenomics may indeed prove to work.
That being the case, what are people interested in?
I think there's definitely more interest among our clients with respect to the yen and potentially playing further depreciation from here, both in the short term but also over the long term. In particular, 10-year, very long-term options have proved attractive among some of our client base, given the favourable characteristics and pricing they currently exhibit.
And finally, how does all this make clients view the rest of their assets?
clients are looking to continue growth in the US and potentially more action out of the ECB as drivers for whether to get more positive on risk assets. The Japanese announcements in themselves are unlikely to change or tip the balance, if you will, with respect to clients' views with respect to their global balances, global portfolios. We should keep in mind that the latest extension in QE of $10 trillion, in dollar terms, the total policy now is actually lower than it was when it was first announced back in December 2012, given the yen has depreciated from 80 versus the dollar to roughly 114 today.
Simon Smiles in Zurich. And that brings us to the end of this fifth edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance, every week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at monocle.com or tune in via iTunes or SoundCloud. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.